Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are live from the Kintec Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is going to join us in just a second here. Chat about some of the trends around the NHL. It's actually, I'm glad, because I know we talked just really briefly about the Bruins with Gentile yesterday, but Shayna wrote about the Bruins this week, and then, of course, they take an ugly loss against the Hurricanes last night. So we can chat a little bit what's going on there with the Bruins with Shayna. Just to follow up on our Dakota Joshua conversation quickly, I see that Rick Tocchet has designated him officially as day-to-day Dakota Joshua. So obviously getting very close, and if it's not tomorrow, could easily be Monday or at least sometime on this road trip, and that'll be awesome to see Dakota Joshua back in a game for the Vancouver Canucks. As mentioned, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and lots of thoughts coming in. We can get a little bit more into the inbox later on in the show when we have the open segment, but as mentioned, right now, very pleased to have on the line, she covers the NHL for The Athletic. She is Shayna Goldman. Shayna, thank you as always for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And I know you wrote about the kind of early season malaise for the Boston Bruins this week, and then they go out and put up that result last night where they lose 8-2, outshot 37-15 in Carolina by the Hurricanes. So is it like is fraud watch on for the Boston Bruins here? Like where are they on the fraud meter for you based on their early season results?
Oh, they are leading the way on there. Like, they are right. They're right there. And they were there before yesterday's game. It just kind of confirmed it. It's funny. At first, I was wondering, like, am I being too harsh on them? You know, because I've been trying to chip together a list in the early goings of the season, knowing what I'm going to write about. And then you tweak it as you go, because if something changes in, like, 1 out of 10 games, it kind of blows everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And every game, it's like I'm digging my heels in a little bit more, like, they just don't look good. And it's different from their start last season, which in my opinion wasn't very good, because at 5-on-5, I felt like they weren't dominating games. And I remember, you know, you're watching these games and seeing them go to overtime when they probably shouldn't have. And then you'd start seeing all those charts come out, and it's like how teams handle games as they go on in the first, second, and third period. And most contenders you see separate themselves from their opponent when they have a lead, or, you know, just overall. And the Bruins didn't. But they managed to chip together enough of a good season last year, and goaltending helped. Now, the goaltending isn't covering up their mistakes, and they just look awful. And it's across the board. It's the players they need to be good just look bad.
How is it looking for the ex-Canucks, for Elias Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov in Boston through the first month?
Bad. Really bad. They are definitely a part of the problem, not the solution right now. And, you know, with Lindholm, I know they're giving him a heavy workload. I think it's him and Charlie Coyle are facing toughest competition. And I wonder if that's just weighing him down. He doesn't look in sync with David Pastrnak yet. And I get it. These are two totally different players. They have no experience together, so on and so forth. But I thought at least Pastrnak could kind of be the play driver that we all know he is, that it would help Lindholm be just fine as a 1C, which I think is too great a role for him. I think he's a very good 2C, right? And it isn't clicking at all there. And the same goes with Zadorov. But it's not just him on defense. Like, Charlie McAvoy and Hampus Lindholm don't look good either. Everyone just, it's wild how much they just aren't clicking. And it doesn't look like coaching has any answers on how to fix this.
So let's move to the team that roughed them up last night, because we saw the Carolina Hurricanes also, you know, handle the Canucks. They won. It was an overtime win. But if anyone was paying attention to that game, it was a very much more convincing victory for the Carolina Hurricanes than the scoreboard might have indicated. Looks to me, Shayna, like they are getting out and after it on the rush with a level of sort of like attacking verve and competence that is not been their calling card in recent years. What are you seeing from Carolina here?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It feels like they're adding to their strengths, which maybe we didn't see coming, because their offseason wasn't as loud, I guess, as everyone expected. You know, Jake Gensel walked. They didn't say, okay, we're going to find a bigger fish and we're going to do all this and that. They kept Natchez. They made quieter signings like, you know, Gostisbehere and Walker. And it worked. You know, it's amazing what a system they've built here, that they can have so much roster turnover and still be okay, including losing their entire second pair, because you know that you have your cornerstones in Aho and Slavin, but you would think maybe Pesce needs to be there to be a part of it, and you need a little bit more than just two guys to, like, be those staples, and yet it doesn't matter. But I do like that they're adding to their strengths, because that's what makes the best contenders, right? You can be the best rush team in the league, and that's an amazing weapon to have, but you need versatility, and the same's true the other way. So adding a little more pop and just going against the grain of what we know for them, I think is the best thing they could possibly do.
So I can interest you in some Eric Robinson on the top line, maybe some Jack Roslovic in the top six?
I mean, Jack Roslovic in the top six is the surprise to me. As someone who watched him very closely last year, especially when he came to New York and through that playoff run, to me, he is someone that fits on a third line in very sheltered minutes, and what he can do is more limited. But I guess they just have better lineup balance right now, right? Like, Jarvis is currently back on that third line. We know he's sick on the third line, and they're a great shutdown force. But on that top line, if you have someone like Svechnikov, who is finally looking like the player I feel like we're all waiting for him to be, and Aho is still incredible, you throw Rossovic on there and don't make the team too hot, too top heavy, whatever.
One of the positive surprise stories in the NHL so far in the Metro division there is the Washington Capitals, who 7 wins through their first 9 games.
Can I interrupt you and get her specifically to talk about, sorry, Shayna, specifically in the context of the Washington Capitals, can we just spend a minute talking about how sick Alexi Protas is?
Oh, my God. That play the other night when he grabbed the bench, grabbed the stick off the bench for a shorthanded rush chance, that probably would have been my favorite goal of the year if he scored it. He is so much fun. And when you think Capitals, you do not think up-and-coming talent at all, right? And even with them developing last year, right? Like Protas and McMichael and Ferravari, like, you saw them last year, and you, as the year went on, we're like, okay, the Capitals look better as a team, and we gave a lot of credit to Spencer Carter, and rightfully so, but I felt like the young players still weren't becoming household names outside of the Washington market. Like, I didn't think they were doing enough, and this season, it's like, you can't stop talking about them, which makes it so much more exciting to be like, yeah, look what Ovechkin's doing, but let's talk about that entire top line. Let's talk about Billenstrom and Protas, and let's just keep, you know, talking about all these different players in Washington and how well they're clicking together. But I feel like we're getting that, like, individual achievement a little bit more, and I am hyped for them.
And it's interesting, too, because they're having such a successful start to the season. And, of course, their big splash acquisition in the summer was Pierre-Luc Dubois, and that was a pretty surprising trade, I think, for a lot of people when it happened. It's not as if he's, you know, refound his game necessarily, at least based on the counting stats, 1 goal, 5 points in 9 games. How is the Pierre-Luc Dubois era starting in Washington?
It's starting so well for two reasons. Like, one, it brought in another center, which the Capitals needed. Their center depth was so bad. It was Billenstrom and nobody else for a minute there. And it's nice that they got to really turn the page. You have no Kuznetsov at all after last year. And now you have a completely new face, right, in Dubois. And it just works. I think part of what works, though, is that it's not just him and nobody else around him. Like, that line is legitimately good. You have Connor McMichael, who can play center playing the wing, and he's putting up a ton of shots. And then you have Tom Wilson, who looks a lot better. Like, he was much more impactful on the score sheet to open the season, and that slowed down. But he just looks like himself again. And I guess we underestimate how long it takes players to recover from injuries and, like, legitimately get back up to speed in games as well. It's the same thing with, like, Matthew Tkachuk. Mm-hmm. When you look at Florida last season, the beginning of the year, he was healthy and in the lineup, but he didn't look like himself until midway through the year. And you're like, oh, it must have been, I don't know, that broken sternum recovery period. Like, we easily forget that.
Yeah, the difference between return to play and return to performance, right, is a distinction that the Los Angeles Rams coach, Sean McVay, always uses. And I think we should steal it for hockey, right? Especially when you're coming off, in Wilson's case, an ACL. You might need to wait 18 to 24 months before your performance impact is sort of mitigated in your recovery there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like in some cases, guys can come back and make a quicker impact. And in some cases, we're distracted by it. Like, think Nikita Kucherov the year, he missed the entire regular season and went into the playoffs. Everybody was so upset because he was scoring a ton. It didn't matter what he looked like out there. The man could not move and just stood in the circle and passed the puck or shot the puck, but he wasn't doing anything in between. He was piling up points. It took so much time for him to get back up to full speed. Or you think Mark Stone. Mm-hmm. Mark Stone didn't look good in the playoffs last year either. Yeah. He was back in the lineup and being healthy enough to play a regular season game, you know, is obviously different from being healthy enough to play a postseason game. But just being healthy enough to play a game does not mean you are back, you're good, you're at full speed or anything.
But Shayna, if we note that, then we have to stop feeding red meat to Canadian hockey fans who are convinced that the league is letting the Vegas Golden Knights cheat. So we can't bring that up.
I mean, we need the conspiracies. We really do. Like, last year we had the most dramatic season yet, and it was so dramatic before like day one even started. And this year, I feel like we haven't had nearly enough drama. I'm still blaming it on the fact, like I'm holding this grudge, that the NHL season didn't start with the Maple Leafs, because that would have amped it up for me in the way I have needed. But I just feel like this season's not drama enough. So I want the conspiracies. I want everyone yelling about something and just keep amping it up, because that'll make things way more fun.
Welcome to Vancouver. That's all we do.
Come to Vancouver, Shayna.
That's all we do.
No shortage of drama here.
Shayna, while watching Vancouver measure up poorly, frankly, against Florida when they were without Barkov and Tkachuk, although the Canucks ground out a win in that game, Tampa Bay, Carolina, and New Jersey, I am struck by a question here, which is, are we back to living in a world where the East has a significant upper hand against the Western Conference?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know what? It feels that way right now, and I wonder if it will feel that way as the season goes on, and like that travel to the West could be what crushes so many teams, right? It's that like crucial Western swings we see teams fold. Maybe they're just too energized right now. Maybe that's the issue. But it's also the teams that are coming west right now to Vancouver specifically are very, very, very good. And it's not that I want to give the Canucks any slack, because honestly, they don't deserve it. And they haven't deserved it since the very beginning of the season when they almost blew that game to the Flames. It's just, you know, the Panthers come to town and the Canes come to town and the Devils come to town. You have to be on your toes even more because those are the teams that they are, and not be like, oh, it's okay, they're coming west. Like, we have the home ice advantage. Like, you don't. You absolutely do not have any advantages right now.
So obviously, you know, we're referencing the nonstop drama here in Vancouver, and the team performance has certainly been uneven, as you know. But so much of the drama, really all of it, is centered around Elias Pettersson. And this is now, you know, really since February last year, it's been since we've seen the dominant, extremely productive version of Elias Pettersson. It's just such a baffling situation. We're kind of at our wit's end trying to make sense of it. What's your perspective on it from the outside looking in on Elias Pettersson's struggles, Shayna?
I'm still so surprised that it wasn't just an injury last postseason. Like, yeah. I really thought with everything in my being, there was something wrong with his wrist. And to hear it wasn't, and then to see it continue this year, you're like, oh, he really wasn't injured. But it's tough because you can't make the excuses of last season, right? It's like, oh, well, he has Mikheyev on his wing. That must be it. Okay, here's Jake DeBrusk. It didn't work out. And, like, I still look at DeBrusk and I'm like, he still looks like the perfect player for JT Miller and Besser. So I'm, you know, the lineup change, you're like, okay, sure. But you would have expected a little bit more, like, give me anything is what I think when I'm looking at that Pettersson out there right now. So it just feels like they're trying to energize that line in any way they can. Someone like Garland does help you. He definitely brings energy, but there's a reason he's not a first line player. And you want it to be, you know, that Pettersson's a guy that has that effect on everyone around him, not you're trying to spark him and trying all these different combinations to make him click, right? He's the player that is supposed to lead the way and let everything else trickle down. And it's not only him right now, but he definitely is not helping matters. The one thing that stands out, I think, is last season, especially when you look at how the season started to ended, he did get better defensively, and we saw the Canucks like trending up in the right direction below the surface. So they weren't just, you know, the PDO warriors last season and everything like that. But when you have a player like that, Do you want him to be good defensively? Of course, right? Because he feels like someone that could win a Selke Award, especially the way it's graded in today's game. But you don't want it that it holds him back offensively. I don't know if it is, but I do wonder if it's like they're changing too much about his game fundamentally for him to play to his strengths in the way that he needs to. And the longer he doesn't do that, and the longer he doesn't score, like, yes, you're going to get a nice boost if you make an amazing defensive play. But when you're a top line center, you need to be elite offensively. And I feel like that right now is what he needs just to kind of like open the gate, and then maybe it'll all come flowing back to him. But it just isn't right now.
So, Shayna, while you were handling a couple questions from Jamie, I decided I'd build a data set just because,
as one does,
as one does normally when they're on the radio with their friends. Here's the numbers for you, okay? Head-to-head, Eastern Conference versus Western Conference. 67 head-to-head games through the first month of the campaign. The West's record is 32-27-8 for 72 points. That's a 531 point percentage. The East, 35-23-9. That's 79 points for a 589 point percentage. That's a pretty significant edge for the East, especially when you consider things like the Panthers have played three games against the West, and all of them were without Barkov and Tkachuk. On the other hand, the Blackhawks have only played one game against the East, so that'll sort of balance things out. But it is trending in the early going that the East is kind of outperforming the West here. Does that match how you rate the quality of teams in these conferences?
Yeah, I mean, we are the best coast for a reason.
No, that's okay. The alternative spin here, Shayna, is that if you're a Western Conference team like the Canucks, opportunity might knock come playoff time.
There you go.
Right? We'll spin a silver lining out of this.
I mean, why not? It's tough. You know, I'm like, I'm looking through it now too, and I'm trying to be like, oh yeah, what about the bad teams like the Sharks? Have they played a lot of Eastern Conference teams? You're like, they have only played Western Conference teams so
right.
far.
Interesting.
So yeah, that is, I did not expect that.
Yeah. The Sharks aren't even in the sample. So it's going to get worse.
Well, it's going to get worse. I have an idea now. Like, you've given me an idea. I don't have an answer to this question as much as, like, does it match the quality? Because I feel like the bad in the West might be worse than the bad in the East.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of me wants to say there's going to be more mid teams in the West and the East, but maybe it's partially because teams like the Capitals now are getting better, and we're all sitting there in the East waiting for teams like Detroit and Ottawa to take the next steps, and it feels like Ottawa is. I want to look at this on a month-to-month basis, and I want to know if this changes as the year goes on, because I'm so curious if in January everyone is so tired that that trip to the West starts crushing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should track this. This could be a fun project now that I'm giving you more work, but like,
no,
it's
just
the honor of writing with me.
I just slacked you the data, so you can have a look for fun. I'm in. First of all. Here's the dynamic, though, that I'm monitoring here, Shayna, is like I'm watching this Kraken team, for example, and I know they played poorly last night in Toronto, but for the most part, they've actually been pretty good this season, provided that Philip Grubauer is in net. And I'm watching them, and they look like they're playing not great hockey, but decent hockey. Vince Dunn's been out of the lineup on, and I'm just trying to I'm watching them, and I'm like, this is a classic playoff caliber team, fringe playoff caliber team. They're going to be somewhere between sixth or sixth in the West and ninth or tenth in the West at season's end. And then I'm watching teams like Washington and Ottawa, and that's sort of the Eastern answer to the Kraken caliber team. And there is no world, in my view, in which the Kraken are going to skate either of those teams off the ice. But those teams have a real opportunity to skate the Kraken off the ice in any given game in terms of how I rate those groups at the moment. So I just feel like there's going to be a couple playoff teams in the West, in my view, that are softer than several teams that are probably going to miss in the East. That's sort of where I'm sort of at. The mid-tier of the East looks a lot more imposing to me.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Like, the way you just spelled that out, it makes sense. And it's funny, because, like, we are going to get to see Ottawa, Seattle in, 2 days? So we'll get, like, a nice little sample of it, too, to see if that's true. But I definitely agree with you. Like, the Kraken look like a good team right now. And I feel like they're going to get better as the year goes on. Like, they're making good improvements, and you see them trending in the right direction on both ends of the ice at 5-on-5, and, you know, the power play is starting to work again for them. You get Vince Dunn back, and you're like, sick. But Capitals versus Kraken, I am picking the Capitals the way that they're playing right now. There are definitely some teams in that, like, middle area that you're like, okay, I expect the Sabres to be, like, 10th in the division, you know, in the East. Maybe the Kraken would have the leg on them, but the Kraken are potentially a wild card team, and the Sabres probably aren't. So I'm with you on that. It kind of felt that way last year too. Like, those last spots in the West, we were talking about the St. Louis Blues potentially making it. And the Blues, yes, they had their run of good goaltending and they were finishing a ton. But you look below the surface and you're like, this is still terrible. Like, there's so much work to be done here and there's room for improvement. It just wasn't going to happen last year. So you're onto something. I definitely think you are.
Shayna, this was great. I'm glad we could have like an impromptu athletic pitch session here on the air. And thank you as always for joining us. We always appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That is Shayna Goldman covering the NHL for The Athletic and, of course, also a part of the Too Many Men podcast. And always a pleasure to have Shayna on the show. I agree. So one, I think probably the Sharks are the worst team in the league. Are there any teams in the Eastern Conference that are in the Sharks Blackhawks tier of badness for you?
Montreal,
probably.
I know their results are better, but that team's defensive play has been so bad.
Defense has been comically bad.
It's really a Montem show in Montreal that's, I think, buoyed their overall record. That's it. Like, the Blue Jackets look kind of frisky and young and interesting. You know, the Islanders.
Well, you know what the team with the worst points percentage in the East is right now?
The Penguins. Yeah, well, then they look bad.
They look like they're in trouble.
So the Penguins and the Canadiens, I think we're not used to considering them that way, but put it this way, I won't be stunned if the likes of San Jose or Anaheim, at least one of them, gets enough internal improvement from some of their big dog young players that sort of by the end of the season or the middle part of the season, they're a tougher night for their opponents than at least one of the Canadians or the Penguins. That won't shock me.
Yeah, I can see that. I certainly Anaheim as well.
Now, yeah, like Leo Carlson looks like a beast, man. It will not stun me at all if we get to February or something and we're looking at Leo Carlson over his last 2 months of games has 40 points in 35 contests or something outrageous, right? That won't stun me. And by the way, the Sharks look hopeless, but they haven't had much Celebrini.
No, that's a big factor, obviously.
Yeah. And I mean, we saw it in his first game. Like, this guy is ready to make a huge impact at the NHL level. So if they get a couple months of Celebrini games, I think they'll at least look like they have some spunk.
All right. We'll take a break here. Rick Tocchet audio is in, as is Dakota Joshua audio. And given the circumstances, we don't always play player media availabilities here, but I think it's worth doing so in the case of Dakota Joshua. So we'll do that on the other side, and then we'll talk to Dimitri at 1:30 here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. All right, as mentioned, the Canucks were practicing out at UBC today, and we now have some audio in, one from Rick Tocchet and also from Dakota Joshua.
The Joshua audio seems to be about 8 minutes, but I think fans will want to hear from
absolutely.
Him, given what he's been through.
For sure. We're going to play it. My plan is to play Tocchet first, see if there's anything we want to talk about, and then we'll run Joshua.
Yeah, yeah. But
all right,
I think fans will. Great. We bookkeeping done on air. Look, Dakota Joshua, obviously, a testicular cancer diagnosis in the summer.
Yeah.
missed training camp, had surgery, obviously. Looks like it's gone well and that he's on the verge of returning, which is great to hear. Just from a human perspective, even
Absolutely.
Beyond the fact that Joshua's really good and has been missed in his absence from a hockey perspective. So I do think we'll get into that, maybe drop out depending on how the interview goes. But yeah, should we run talk it? Are we ready?
Do you want to throw to it?
No, I want to throw it back to you to throw to it.
Okay. You could have just stopped speaking then, and then I would have jumped in.
Oh. See, this is that stuff that us single guys miss.
Classic bachelor move from Trance. All right, here is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, I think it was a good practice after our day off. You know, usually when we have a stinker, usually this team does a really good job of the, you know, that whenever we practice, we have a good practice, and it usually helps our game. So that's something that we talked about. You know, it's a little bit on me. I've let it. I think the practices have to be a little bit more fundamental and driven. More detailed, more than ever. So I think that's more on me, where I got to make sure I steer that ship more in the fundamental department.
Some extra lines and whatnot in there just to sort of raise the energy.
Lines,
skating lines.
Skating lines.
Yeah. I just find we need some skating legs. I just think that the good, like I said, back to fundamentals. Might have to do that a little bit more often now. Probably have to dial down some of the practices where we need to look for details, and if it's not being done right, do it again. I think we did that last year, and I think just from the last 9 games, I was just reevaluating myself that we're going to have to do that more fundamentals with this team.
What will Forbert have to do to get back in the lineup?
Yeah, I think when he's comfortable, I'll probably talk to him probably on the plane today, see if he feels like maybe he can go tomorrow. I'll ask him, see how he feels.
So in his case, it's more just
Well, I just think, he didn't skate there a lot. I think, but he's ready. He'll be ready soon.
What about Joshua?
Yeah, same thing. I don't even know. Yeah, I would say it's day to day, but see how comfortable, where he feels really good to go. We'll take it another practice more and see where he's at.
When he is ready, what does he bring to this lineup?
Well, I think the attitude, I know you guys know how I feel about body position and wall work. I think he's good at that. And I think he could add a boost to our team with that, with winning battles and, just the way his presence in front of the net. He's a tough guy to play against. So anytime you add a guy like that in the lineup, it's contagious.
One of those lead by example type.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, he's got a good chemistry with Garland. that's something we can look for if he gets back, maybe.
Does how he play exemplify what you want to see from more or less everybody? His game, is that the kind of game you'd like the team to have?
Yeah, I think, he's a bit of a, you need system guys, right? You want guys to be creative. You can't be just 100% system. You got to be creative, and sometimes you're going to make your own reads out there. But I think he knows on certain times where we count on a guy to be there at that time. 9 times of 10, he'll be there. I can name 3 or 4 guys that we know that guys. We just need more of the same attitude. Where guys have to be where they're supposed to be at certain times. Other times when we have the puck and you feel something, you want to go and be creative, go for it. But I just think he's a guy that he's a system guy.
So with what the team has been going through, kind of scuffling a little bit, trying to find their identity, is he a guy who helps get the identity back?
Yeah, he's a voice in the room that, hey, we need this from the team and certain guys. And he's one of those guys. I thought he really grew as a leader last year. He was, when I first got here, he was a real quiet guy. But I thought as the season went on, the way he was playing, he started to have a voice in there.
Rick, you're always talking about milestones or markers.
Yeah,
or
landmarks.
No. Where are you with DeBrusque? Because when goal scorers, if he had 100 shots and it hits posts and a bunch of chances, it's one thing. But it's been a little too quiet, I think, around him. So where is he with landmarks?
Yeah, I think with Jake, I had good talk with him today. Like, he wants to score the goal, but which everybody wants to score. And I hate to say it, I want him to score, but I want him to play the game first, not so much the right way. Like, if we're asking you to be in a landmark, If you continue it, you'll get that goal. But if you kind of venture and you're on the outside and you're not in the battle position, it's hard to get out of those slumps. So I think he's got to just worry about his complete game. The goals will come. And then sometimes when you're in those landmarks and there's a loose puck or a position to get a two-on-one, you're in position where you're not on the outside, where that two-on-one opportunity becomes a two-on-two.
Thatcher on the ice earlier, can you see a timeline yet?
Yeah, I think, I'll be honest, I check him every once in a while. I know he's had some, chunks of good days. And I, yeah, but I don't know, maybe it's a bigger window. I don't know, I think. But like I said, I haven't checked on him in a couple of days.
So much of the game we know is mental, right?
Yeah.
And confidence. And I think it's probably even more so for younger players. So Shelov's, comparing what he's doing right now compared to what he did in the playoffs, obviously a stark difference. Are you concerned about sort of his confidence and where he is mentally?
Yeah, I think it's hard, right? Because if you don't feel good about yourself and you got to wait 3 or 4 or 5, 6 days, then it wears on your mind. Sometimes when you go right back in, sometimes you can get back to your game quicker. But there are some things on the ice that he has to get better at, and Marco's been working with him. Those scrambles in front, they're finding their way in. Last year they weren't, and that's a goalie. That's out of my pay grade, but I just feel like those get really battled down a little bit more, and I think that's something that we're asking them to do.
Do you pay attention to body language?
Not just him, a lot of guys. When things don't go your way, and I'm not saying Artie, I'm saying the team, and I've had that speech last year, and I think probably not that speech with a lot of our guys right now, the defeated at it. Like, we're 4-2-3. We're in okay shape. In the sense that way, but to me it's the mental aspect, our game, and I think body language is something that we got to work on.
So you've been seeing signs of that creeping back in?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, not to the extent when I first got here, but it's creeping back in, and that's my job, to make sure that I address it.
I suppose that helps, so that you can point to last year and say, guys, we hit the standard, you can do this.
Well, the arrow's gone up. Last year we've crept. There's that plateau. Now, that next plateau it's uncomfortable. It's higher expectations. There's a lot of. So, are we going to keep going this way, or is the arrow going down a little because it gets too hard? We're at that state right now. It's only, like I said, the 10th game, I guess, when we play San Jose. So it's not critical, but it has to be mentioned. And I think as a group, the players have to take a hold of that and say, how do we get to that next level of being uncomfortable?
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking after practice today. Some interesting things in there. One, on both Derek Forbort and Dakota Joshua, called Dakota Joshua day-to-day, but also said with both of those players, it might be a case of checking with them on the plane tonight or even checking with them after morning skate to see if they're good to go. So weren't part of the regular lineup at practice today, in the top six defensemen or the top four lines for Dakota Joshua, but Rick Tocchet leaving the door open for one or both of Joshua or Forbort to get in the lineup against the Sharks tomorrow night. Spoke a lot about Dakota Joshua and his imminent return. We'll hear from Joshua momentarily, but I did, just before we go to Dakota Joshua, the commentary from Rick Tocchet at the end there
about body language. Yeah,
that's... and him saying we're 4-2-3, right? And body language is something we got to work on. And even saying, and this is, this has been a common theme really this season for Rick Tocchet, of referencing the way things were when he took over, right? Whether it's defensive play, he referenced it off the rush against Carolina earlier in the week. And then this time it says, it's not as bad, the body language issue, as when I got here, but it's starting to creep back in. That was something he really emphasized early in his tenure. And interesting to hear that that's a concern for him as well. And as we talk about, why is the concern from fans so high when the team is 4-2-3? I think that's part of it, right? You can get the sense that the players are frustrated, that you are seeing some of that negative body language and frustration seeping in for the players.
For sure. And I think it's been pronounced, right? Like, I think it's been pronounced over the course of this homestand, especially.
Yes.
Now, when Rick Tocchet talks body language, we all think JT Miller,
mm-hmm.
right? That's like a natural, immediate thing because guess what? Miller's the emotional barometer of this team.
Yep.
Without question, right? We all know this. And when things are going well for this team and his swashbuckling, willful assertiveness comes to the fore, it's one of the reasons why he's resonated in this market like few others since, I don't know, maybe prime Todd Bertuzzi, in terms of, you know, there's an element to which fans like the hard scrabble, blue collar work ethic. They relate to a durable power forward. And there's a player type that this market has. I mean, there's a lot of fan favorites who have met this rough description over the course of Canucks history. You think about Trevor Linden, you think about Todd Bertuzzi, you think about Ryan Kessler, you think about JT Miller, right? There's a commonality there. It's not a perfect commonality.
No, but a lot of similar traits.
For sure. JT Miller and Trevor Linden personality-wise.
Yeah.
Not a ton of but in terms of traits, in terms of why fans loved their games, right? And so, you know, there have been some instances over the past few games and both positive and negative. There was a shift against the Pittsburgh Penguins when the Canucks were down 2-0. The response shift came from JT Miller's line. And they set up shop, and I don't exactly remember if it was a deflected shot high or a puck that left the zone and found them offside, but the shift was going pretty well. It was like a good response shift, and then something sort of ruined it. And there was a huge reaction from Miller. And the very next shift, you had Kiefer Sherwood hounding Marcus Pettersson. And two shifts later, that 3-goal-in-1-minute onslaught began. And it's like, in that moment, it did really feel to me watching the game live, like JT Miller's frustration had helped propel the team to rally. Okay? On the other hand, I felt I had a sense during that Carolina game where you could see Miller's body language sort of change a bit and the frustration was worn in terms of his body language, where it was like one of two things is going to happen. Either JT Miller is about to score the sickest goal we've seen in a long time, or JT Miller is about to take one of the silliest penalties we've seen in a long time. And there's almost, you know what I mean? And so it's such an unfair balancing act because it feels like retroactively we're going to say, hey, that body language helped the team rally, or that body language is part of the reason they lost because of things that happened that might be outside of his control entirely, right? And I want to be careful about that because I think we've seen it. I think we've seen Miller do a lot of the same stuff when this team is doing well and when they're doing badly, and the reaction is completely different. But is it actually that different, or is it different by a matter of 10%? And then,
but that 10% is key.
Is that 10% key?
Extremely vital, I think, is the answer
right
there.
And I would say that it has felt a little bit more like some previous seasons than it did when this club was channeling all of that competitive energy. It goes beyond JT, but obviously Miller is going to be the first guy we think about and discuss because
when you hear the words body language.
Well, and
his is the most noticeable.
His is the most noticeable, and because it does feel like he soaks up a lot of oxygen and carries this big presence in terms of how this team carries itself on a wider context. Like, if you're the guy who gets credit for the team taking on this identity when you're showing real balls in the playoffs and rallying and pulling off all sorts of miraculous stuff against the Predators and the Edmonton Oilers, we forget about the 4-1 comeback in game 1 of that series. But that was probably, like, in some ways, that was more incredible than, for example, the 2 goals in 30 seconds or the game 4
the
rally
one, yeah,
in Nashville. If you're the guy who gets credit for that, you know, you're also the guy who probably not deserves criticism when it goes the other way, but who, when the coach is like, hey, we need to be better in this area, you know, that's not something I hear as a direct like challenge to JT Miller, but I do think it's something that we are going to talk about as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. And
are fair to talk about.
Rick Tocchet's talking about it.
Yeah.
Right. And interesting commentary on Rick Tocchet or what he's seeing from this team just from a mentality perspective. Okay. As we mentioned, Dakota Joshua, day to day per Rick Tocchet, of course, coming back from testicular cancer.
Tweet comes in and says, I'll never look at JT's body language again after seeing his costume last night.
That's a good one.
Check Twitter. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So let's hear from Dakota Joshua, his thoughts on being very, very close to rejoining his teammates in the lineup. Here is Dakota Joshua.
I'm feeling good. I'm getting better every day. Obviously, it's been a tough road to get back in the mix, but no, it's going good, and just happy to be back out there and getting after it with the guys.
How close do you feel?
being able to come back?
I feel better every day. It's still hard to really pinpoint when that time will be, but more so just making those strides and getting better every day is where I'm at.
Take us through what you've been through over the last few months and the support system you've leaned
on
to get through it.
I mean, it's really hard to put in words, you know, kind of something that you can't really be prepared for, but the support from, you know, my family, friends, the fans, the organization as a whole, everybody's been, you know, so nice and, you know, very caring, which I love to see, and made the tough time a lot easier.
How important has it been for you to be around the team over the last
It means a lot, obviously, you know, not getting to participate in training camp and be there through the start of the season, you know, it's not fun, but just to be around the guys and, you know, go on the road trips and hang out and have laughs goes a long way.
But, everybody's that had cancer sort of has that moment when the doctor reveals the diagnosis, and I'm not trying to pry, but like, you're a young man in prime of your life, an athlete, like, how shocking, how...
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's until you're in that position, like, you know, you can't really describe. It's obviously scary no matter what age. But, you know, I'm just very thankful and happy to be, you know, standing here in front of you guys today. And, you know, yeah, very, very, you know, hard to go through, but thankful for how it's turned out so far.
You're not the first guy in this league to go through this kind of cancer. Did Shea Theodore, Phil Kessel, reach out and...
No, just like I said, I've had enough support around from everybody. It's you know, more so something I'm happy to speak out, and I hope it helps somebody. And especially moving forward, even to just help one person will go a long way and make it worth it. But more so, just you know, try to put it behind me and move on, and you know, continue to strive forward.
Talk to us a little bit about that process, because it's not just a physical process. The mental process as well. Talk to us about what it's been taking to get back to where you're at today.
Yeah, I mean, the initial part of it, very tough, but you know, I'm feeling good today, and like I said, like, you know, for the most part, it's behind me, and you know, there's things that you gotta look for moving forward, but getting past that, you know, the beginning process was a tough part, but yeah, it's in the rear view now, and I'm doing well.
When did you have the surgery, and did they lay out a timeline for when physically you'd be able to play again?
When did I have the surgery?
When
I had it in early September, and like a month and a half, they said, you know, I'd be recovered from the surgery, and I have recovered, and now it's just about getting back in shape and getting to a level where I can go out there and make an impact for the team.
Has the mental and emotional part of it been as challenging or more challenging than the physical part of it?
Has the mental part been harder?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, both very tough. It's not fun to not do anything for a while and then, you know, ramp it back up. It's obviously tough. But, no, mentally, like I said, it was, you know, tough at first, but after going through it, I'm doing well, and yeah, very happy.
Do you think the fact that, you know, as an athlete, you have to be prepared, you have to be ready to play, that's a part of your life to recover from an injury or whatever, do you think that helped you in terms of being ready to recover from something like this?
Yeah, for sure. That's kind of, you know, how I've looked at it. Like, it's just like, you know, people get surgery on anything, whether it's an arm or a leg, like the same kind of process, just getting your body back to full health. And obviously, yeah, like I said, you got to be at a high level to go out there and perform. So that's what I'm aiming for.
How do you balance being very eager, I'm sure, to get back in and get back to playing with, you talked about the conditioning, making sure you're ready to help the team when you get to that point?
Yeah, it's about, you know, jumping in when I can, not so much, you know, just seeing if I can get through the games. I want to go out there and, you know, I want to make stuff happen and, you know, be an impact and help this team win games. You know, not sure when that'll be, but I'm getting close and better every day, like I said.
The team is scuffling just a little bit. You know, the record's still fine, but Rick Tocchet has talked about the team needing to find its identity.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think you might be able to help with that, with your identity, if you could come back?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. And, you know, it's the start of the season. You got some new faces. Everybody's, you know, still trying to gel and get on the same page. So I think that's pretty normal for any team to go through. But, yeah, that's I hope to have a big impact there and, you know, help and form the identity of this team and, you know, be a part of winning hockey games.
How emotional was it to share the news with your teammates?
Yeah, it was a tough time, and you know, not anything that I would wish upon anybody. But like I said, they've been great, and they've been there every step of the way. So you know, it's made the whole process a lot easier, and you know, helped me personally.
You mentioned a little earlier that you know you're an athlete that has this platform. Like, mm-hmm. Do you see yourself sort of embracing this opportunity now to promote awareness and take on this cause?
I mean, I don't know what the future holds, but as I said earlier, if it helps one person, I'm glad that I could help them, and you know, just to shed light on, you know, guys, males, all around the world, you know, just to get checked, and you know, that was the point of coming out and telling everybody. But yeah, no, that's how I feel about it, and mainly if I could help someone, you know, it was worth it.
Rick was just in here saying that you're, even through this process, you've been a big voice in that locker room.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to you to still be able to be around these guys and have that kind of routine still and be able to contribute in your own unique way?
Yeah, no, it's been fun. It's a lot of fun, and we have a great job. So to just, you know, be a part of it and get up to do it every day is a privilege, and you know, that's the best part, being around the guys and, you know, having those bonding moments. You know, it's, you can't say anything bad about it. It's one of the best jobs in the world. So just getting to do that every day makes it easy, and bringing everybody together is good.
Have you got any feedback from anybody since you made your statement? Have you had any feedback from people saying, yeah, thanks, I went and got checked? Or, you
know, yeah. People have reached out and, you know, for sure, let me know their experiences, and
is that gratifying, feeling like you're making
it? Yeah, for sure. You know, it feels good, and you know, nice to know that you're not the only one that's gone through something tough, and yeah, it is gratifying is a good word.
Did you go for a medical and it was discovered, or you just noticed it yourself?
I just thought that something wasn't right, and I got it checked up, and then it unfolded from there. Family's been great, and you know, very supportive every step of the way, and you know, very, very thankful for them. Made some trips out and hung out through the beginning, and you know, now they're ready to see me play again too.
That's Dakota Joshua speaking to the media today after practice. Of course, he's on the road to returning, getting back into the lineup after recovering from testicular cancer, and as he said, close to the top there, you know, he feels better every day. Hard to pinpoint exactly when he'll be back in the lineup, but it's obviously something that he's very excited for, looking forward to. And, you know, he said near the top of that, right? Just a pleasure to be on the ice with his teammates at practice even and get after it with his teammates. So great to see on a personal level, and be great to see for from a hockey perspective for the Canucks too when Dakota Joshua's back in the lineup.
Yeah, awesome that he's that close to returning. Was upgraded to day-to-day today as well by Rick Tocchet. My guess would be it's a next week timeline, just from the fact that the club, like, if you're bringing someone down with you, if you're bringing an extra body with you to San Jose, that's going to speak volumes. Like, mm-hmm. If Baines comes now, the AHL team I think is in California too this week.
That's correct.
So that enables some interesting stuff. I mean, they could actually do the Brännström Bane stuff while they're on the road.
Yeah.
Now, that's tough. Like, the road, the bus trip to Ontario is not exactly something you're excited about. Bakersfield? Yeah. Hey, we're going to SoCal, but you're going to Bakersfield. It's like, come on, man. That is tough.
Instead of having the days off at like the Santa Monica Pier, you're going to Bakersfield.
At the Biker Gang Bar in Bakersfield, California. Sorry, I drive the I-5 every year, as you know. I know Bakersfield.
Yes.
I know Bakersfield better than I should. So I have a specific bar in mind, is really what I'm talking about.
You're hot.
Yeah, it's where I fit in with my assless chaps. Single guy.
All right, we didn't need to hear that. Let's go to break right away. Dmitry Filipovich from the Hockey PDO cast. He joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
I like this one because it's spooky.
I guess.
Yeah, it's spooky. It feels like, you know what? It sounds like the music that you'd hear in a Mario Kart level that featured a haunted house.
I was literally just about to say that.
Yeah,
I'm
let's go.
So choked.
Same
you
wavelength?
Said it first. No, I'm not pleased. I'm just devastated that you said it first.
Fair enough.
Anyways, welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650 here. I'm Jamie Dodd. That's Thomas Durance. We're live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com.
Can I introduce our guest?
Sure, go for it.
And we're joined for the final segment of the week by our favorite chap, Dmitry Filipovich. How are you, sir?
I heard about the snafu in the previous segment.
Everyone's overreacting. It's fine.
Mostly me.
It's definitely not the worst thing you've ever said on air.
Nope. Anyway, moving on quickly.
Speaking of bad things I've said, here are my takes.
Is that what we're going to draft? Biggest trance screw ups on air?
No, I don't think so. We can if you want. There's not very many of them.
No.
And even those that are, I'm like, I'm not wrong as I slowly turn into a corn cob.
Well, and I was going to say, those that are, we're not legally allowed to repeat on the air. So
that's true.
Tough.
We can, one day we got to draft drill tweets, by the way. Just like, I do think that's an important.
I don't know about that.
I think that's an important thing for us to do down the line. No, today, let's draft. I think we should draft Canucks bounce backs. What do you guys think?
Is there enough meat on the bone? I mean, I guess there's a lot of players who are off to a bad start.
Yeah.
So there's that.
It seems like one that's heavily skewed towards a first overall pick.
I think there's at least three really good first rounders.
One that ultimately only matters, though.
Well, one that matters more than the others, but DeBrusk bouncing back matters for this team.
But are we drafting how much? First of all, we're not even at the draft yet. But are we drafting how much it matters, or like likelihood, or
yeah, just
when it's going to happen?
No, you're drafting players that will perform better over the balance than they have in the first month of the season. Period.
Okay.
So that's what we're gonna do for our draft. But Dim, I want to start. Me and Shane and I had this discussion, and Jamie was here for it too. You were part of the discussion as well about the relative strength of the East and the West.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I actually did crunch the numbers for fun. 531 point percentage for the West head-to-head against the East. 589 for the East against the West. And San Jose hasn't played an Eastern Conference opponent yet. So you would expect, at least to some extent, that number to rise. The Blackhawks have also only played one game against the East.
Right.
So these numbers are not even inflated by sort of the dregs of the Western Conference facing off against Eastern Conference opponents. Is there a material difference, in your view, between the quality of the East and the West this season? Is this a small sample noise or something that's likely to prove to be a trend as the season goes on?
I think it'll probably even out once the Oilers inevitably bounce back, once they see that regression. I think the Stars are right up there for best team in the league. But yeah, certainly right now it's skewed towards the East. We're watching this matinee game in Finland right now with Florida beating Dallas 6-2 at the moment. And that's a pretty definitive statement on their part. So I think certainly the East is looking much stronger right now. I think it's too early to say that it's like a meaningful difference at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think the West, especially up top, is going to wind up solidifying over the next couple weeks and months. So there is that to look forward to. But yeah, right now, I mean, the East clearly looks much more dominant, especially up top.
Are Florida the easy Stanley Cup repeat favorites for you here?
Yeah, I mean, the only limiting factor there is just like how impossible a feat it seems.
It's hard
to make it.
Yeah.
I know the Lightning just did it recently, making it to three straight Stanley Cup finals,
yep.
But those are kind of like unique circumstances based on the season lengths and all that. I think for them to do that, especially with their playing style, how like aggressively and tenaciously they play, it would require a lot of health. They've had that the past 2 years. I know 2 years ago, once they made it to the Stanley Cup final against Vegas, they kind of fell apart
and
they were
basically,
yes.
Yeah.
But
that's actually a good point, because it's not just a repeat, right? It's three straight trips to the Stanley Cup finals that they'd be trying to pull off. Like,
yeah,
it's extraordinarily difficult.
That would be incredibly impressive. Now, I will say, like, they missed Barkov for 2 weeks or so earlier this season and didn't really miss a beat without him. Like,
yep.
for the most part, I come the playoffs, they'll need everyone at full health. But I think with their depth right now, they'd be able to survive the regular season at least. So, yeah, I mean, they look very good. Pretty much as good as they looked last year, in my opinion.
With, I mean, are we going to really be able to live through the takes if the state of Florida, with their tax rate, makes it to six straight Stanley Cup Finals?
Oh, man.
I mean, we're already at five. Does the six make that big of a difference?
Is that going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back on this? I mean, we're already, the discourse is off the charts on that one anyways, right?
Yeah, I'm just saying, it's going to be like at a nuclear level if the Panthers pull it off again. What if it's Panthers, Tampa Bay in the conference final? Because Tampa Bay is looking
what
sick.
What if it's Panthers, Tampa Bay, and then Dallas, Vegas in the West?
Oh, God.
Or realistic possibility.
It's so totally
honestly, or Nashville. I mean, if they get their ship.
Now you're stretching a bit. Far-fetched.
So the Canucks play the Sharks tomorrow and then the Ducks on Tuesday. Are there any signs of life that you're seeing from either of these teams in the West so far?
Well, we should say, I mean, you threw that unnecessary and unsolicited shot at the Sharks earlier, saying they haven't played any of the Eastern Conference teams yet. Those are the three straight victories.
I know.
San Jose Sharks.
I've been downplaying that
three in a row.
I've been downplaying that all.
I think the
show
the longest active winning streak in the Western Conference right now. I saw.
Let's go.
The hottest team in the league, or at least the West.
Yeah, they can't be stopped.
The San Jose Sharks.
No, listen. I mean, this is a get right spot for the Canucks. Certainly, I don't even lump because they're playing L.A. later on as well, right?
Yeah.
So through the California trip, I mean, this is a get right spot.
You'd lump L.A. in with the other two?
Not in terms of quality, but for whatever defensive deficiencies the Canucks exploited or showed, especially against speed and the rush against Carolina and New Jersey this week.
Not going to be as big an issue against the Kings?
Yeah, I mean, they put those six goals or whatever on Vegas in that TNT game earlier this week, but for the most part, it's kind of the same as it's always been for them, especially the past couple of years in terms of offensive creativity and sort of generally lethargic offensive play. So that's a get-right spot for the Canucks, I think. Mm-hmm. If they keep showing some of these issues they've been having recently, then I'd start to get genuinely worried. But I think this is going to be a really good spot for them to bounce back. And it starts with these games against the Sharks and Ducks in particular.
Yeah, no Macklin Celebrini for the Sharks. So I guess the player of interest really is Will Smith, who, you know, obviously not the same caliber of prospect as Macklin Celebrini, but a lot of hype him in his rookie year coming out of college. Worth turning on a Sharks game from time to time or not so much yet?
I think from what I saw, he definitely struggled right out of the gate in his first couple games. I believe he scored his first two goals of his NHL career last night, though. We'll see. It's way too early to judge, especially with the quality of this roster, whether he's a long-term fit down the middle. I'm sure they're going to give him as much runway as they can to explore that. Might be a more of a winger down the road. But ultimately, yeah, I want to see him get more reps. I think he's going to get more comfortable. Clearly has high-end skill that made him such a top prospect. I'd add that top line in particular as well. If you watch the comeback they had to start this winning streak against Utah, where they were down 4-1, pulled the goalie, scored three goals with the empty net, and then won it in overtime, it was all that top line. And they're playing really well together. Like, Granlund's definitely bounced back after whatever happened to him during that short stint in Pittsburgh. Uh-huh. Tyler Toffoli is just a bona fide NHL
goal scorer. Yep.
And William Eklund, who showed flashes last year despite having no teammate quality, all of a sudden is just loving life playing with, like, two legitimate NHL players.
Two bona fide NHL players,
So he's having a great time. So I think that top line in particular is really fun. Drake Walman, who they got paid the 53rd overall pick to get this summer, has been awesome. And adds a bit of like creativity and fun to that lineup as well. So
and may gritty,
yeah.
Or the Canucks may score and do a gritty on him.
On him, but Zadorov's not here.
That's true.
To really continue Zadorov. The gritty battle.
Yeah, he scored the other night, and it was a very subdued celebration.
Walman?
I was disappointed. Yeah, I was like, oh, come on.
Where's the gritty?
How often are you scoring that you're going to just take
this for
granted?
Especially once you go to San Jose, it's like you're not trying in the playoff race. Just hit the gritty, man.
Yes.
Come on, what are you doing?
Would have been cool. With what are you seeing from William Eklund?
I really like his game. Like I said, last year he had a few performances in particular where he really just put the team on his back, but for the most part it was a very uphill battle for him just because he had no one really to play off of. His game has been able to shine through and open up more so now that he's playing with these two guys. I really like his game. He's clearly not sort of like a, I don't want to say not a foundational piece because he clearly is for them, but not necessarily someone who's just going to like overcome his environment as he showed last year. Not that very many young players can, but now that he's in this spot, I really expect big things from him and he's genuinely fun to watch. So I'm a fan.
There was just a pair of Finnish hockey fans in the crowd at the Global Series. One was dressed as Mario, but with a Panthers logo on the hat, and the other was dressed as Luigi.
But with the Stars.
But with the Stars logo on the hat. That's honestly one of the coolest ways to attend a game costume-wise I've ever seen. Love that. The LA Kings, okay? So we're not seeing the 1-3-1 stuff from them. They don't have Drew Doughty.
Whoa. We're just skipping over the Ducks? Your beloved Ducks?
No,
Ducks contact?
We should talk about the Ducks.
I was going to finish with some Leo Carlson talk.
All right.
I thought we would save what was most exciting for last.
Okay.
You want me to go chronological?
It would seem to make sense to me, but that's fine.
All right, satisfy Jamie Dodd in his linear mind. Forget my in media res interview stylings. Okay, Leo Carlson is having a pretty special start to the season from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Ducks, what would you sort of put as a probability, a percentage probability on our Ducks being even like a tough out over the second half of the season?
Pretty low, I'd say.
Yeah.
I think a lot of our concerns heading into the year, based on what we saw in the second half last year, that Greg Cronin is really just trying to rein everything in terms of like youthful exuberance and general
joy.
Fun and just trying to play like
structured
lock
hockey,
it down, structured hockey and quote unquote teaching these guys how to win at the NHL level. Sounds good in theory. Unfortunately, I think it's taken away a lot of what you would have been excited about with this Ducks team previously. Now, they're getting a lot of points out of the gate because Lukas Dostal has been far and away the best goalie in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like him, Tom. He was one of my guys heading into the season that we did on my show. So I'm not necessarily expecting it to fall off anytime soon, although a .945 save percentage is preposterous in today's NHL landscape. But they're relying on him to just an ungodly degree, right? Like last night, even against Pittsburgh, shots were 46-20 something at that point, and Crosby winds up winning in overtime.
Yep.
Dostal earned them that 1 point. And if you can generate that little against a Pittsburgh team that we've seen everyone exposed to this point, that's pretty alarming. They're really just very content to sit back, essentially pack it in their zone, and just rely on Lukas Dostal to stop 40-50 shots every game and not really try to create themselves. So that's kind of sad to see. Like, a guy like Mason McTavish is really struggling this season. Trevor Zegras is sort of being asked to play a game that's very not on brand for him, to just to fit in based on what Greg Cronin wants from him. So I guess you can make the argument that some of these guys might benefit from it in the long run. But for right now, I think it's a pretty tough watch on their part.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Zegras because I feel like there's not a whole lot of players whose reputation has undergone a bigger shift over the last few years. Like, you go back just a couple seasons and it's like one of the young faces of the league, flashy Trevor Zegras, appointment viewing, and then all the struggles last season, and can he play the right way? Is he ever going to help you win? And now it's 3 points in 10 games for Trevor Zegras. I mean, what kind of a player? He's still only 23. What kind of a player could there still be in Trevor Zegras in Anaheim?
I think there could still be a pretty special playmaker. You can sometimes see, like, on the rare occasion the Ducks actually have the puck in the offensive zone.
Yeah.
He's still doing a lot of those high-end passing traits of getting the funneling it into the slot and, like, looking for teammates in creative ways. Unfortunately, the opportunities to do so are just so few and far between for them. I mean, at this point, last I checked, Robbie Fabry is leading this team in ice time amongst forwards, which, great for Robbie. Unfortunately, for the rest of other players, probably not the best. So they're just relying on a lot of these veterans like Fabry at this point, which feels crazy to say because I still remember when he was a young hotshot prospect.
I'm a Robbie Fabry truther.
Yeah.
I'm holding the torch for Robbie Fabry.
I also was a decade ago. I've turned the light
don't
off since.
Up. Don't give up.
Looks like Troy Terry and Leo Carlson narrowly passed him in minutes per game last night.
Oh, okay.
So thank goodness.
Not at 5-on-5, though.
No, probably not.
Oh, there you go.
Overall.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Leo Carlson, let's stop focusing on all the negatives here because there's obviously plenty of them.
There's some horses, man.
There are.
Yeah.
I love Pavel Minchikov still. Sick. I think he's someone who can sort of break the mold of what they're trying to do at the defense position.
How dare you ignore my guy, Robbie Fabry.
Robbie Fabry.
I'm not ignoring him. We're giving him full attention here.
Owen Zellweger is my guy.
Yes.
He's playing awesome.
Well, they have a lot of our guys, and I think that's why we've been so emotionally attached to this team.
There's
and
a
just
ton
every
of talent.
Year predicting the breakout, and it hasn't happened yet. I haven't really seen the signs beyond the goaltending that it will happen again this year. If Dostal keeps playing at this level, then yeah, I guess they're going to be a tough out, but I think they need to get more out of these skaters than they have been currently.
Yeah, they're getting pummeled.
I mean, they're not generating anything. They're like in the low 20s in terms of shots per game. Like, it's just, they never have the puck.
Man, that, the baseline level of talent there, if they can start to just play fun hockey feels like they're ripe to take a quantum leap forward quickly in the next 18 months. Well, so I'm going to keep picking them.
And the building blocks are there.
Yes.
Like on the blue line, the guys we mentioned, Leo Carlson, as you alluded to, like, is such a beast on the
McTavish,
puck already.
Yeah.
So they have a lot to work with there. They just have to figure out the way they want to play before it's too late, I guess.
So now to the Kings.
Thank you.
Everyone saw Brant Clark's goal.
Yes.
Or the setup,
Yeah.
On the Kopitar goal.
Yeah,
that was nasty work from Brant Clark. How are the Kings treading water? And they're doing more than treading water. They've played pretty good hockey through the first little bit of the season. How are they managing to do this without Doughty?
Yeah, they played a really good bounce back game, as I said, against the Golden Knights at home in their most recent game. Before that, though, and it was a back-to-back, they had a largely uninspiring performance, I thought, against the Sharks, which contributed to one of the Sharks' wins here during this streak. And so it's been pretty underwhelming, in my opinion. Like, they've been banking some points here so far. And to your point, just kind of treading water here while they can, while Doughty's still out, is going to help a lot. And that's kind of the goal, I guess, for them right now. But I haven't seen, for all the talk, that they were going to revolutionize their approach. They were going to stop playing the 1-3-1. It was going to be a more fun system for their guys to play in. I haven't really seen that. Quinton Byfield, who my expectations were just through the roof for this season after what he did last year, has struggled so far. Kevin Fiala finally scored a goal in the most recent game, but he was struggling. Then he got scratched for missing a team meeting because he apparently forgot to set his iPhone alarm or whatever the story was. I think he actually said it was like his iPad. I'm like, who's setting their alarm?
I think it was that his iPhone broke and he misset it on his iPad as a backup.
That's outrageous.
Yeah.
Just get a teammate to wake you up, man. iPad. So, yeah, it's been another case of this, right? Where, like, you look at the individual pieces, even with Doughty out, they have a lot of talent. They should be more fun than they are. It's kind of been more of the same as last year, though. Like, they're just trying to grind out these games. The power play, if you're a Canucks fan right now and you think the Canucks power play is struggling, like, this one has been a really tough watch this season. They're not really generating anything. So I have high hopes for them just because of the personnel involved, but for whatever reason, it hasn't fit the way it should again this season.
The Kings have been a tough matchup for the Canucks for some reason, and yet it's amazing to me that somehow they're generating fewer shots 5-on-5 than they were even last year. That's unthinkable to me. All right, we got a draft if we're going to draft.
We'll do a quick draft here. So we're doing
Canucks players that will perform better over the balance of the season than they have through their first nine games.
And I think it should be how big the gap will be between what they do over the remainder and what they've done so far.
Sure.
That should be how we're ranking this here.
Okay.
Okay. So who wants to go first?
I will. You know what? I haven't picked
first
in a long time.
You go.
So I'm going to pick first.
How convenient.
Yeah. I will take Elias Pettersson.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I think we all hope, a lot of Canucks fans are hoping that you're right.
I better be.
Well, all the performance has just been so low.
It has.
There's nowhere to go but up.
Nowhere to go but up. So, yeah, I mean, feels like a safe bet, too, based on his track record, but also it doesn't feel like a safe bet at all when you're watching the Canucks play lately. But you know what? You got to swing if you're going to win.
I'm
picking Christian McCaffrey
first
overall.
You got to go for the fences when you have the first overall pick.
That's
all right,
cool.
Tim, you can go.
All right. Jake DeBrusk is the obvious pick here, hasn't scored yet. It's funny because, Tom, I remember this very distinctly. You and I were hanging out at Third Beach this summer, and amidst our fantasy prep for fantasy football, we were talking about the Jake DeBrusk signing, as you and I are to do. And I said, I think Canucks fans are going to be very frustrated by this player because he goes through these stretches like a lot of goal scorers do, where he just doesn't score goals. And at that point, when he's not scoring, I saw this in Boston where everyone's like, well, what's he doing? How is he contributing?
What the heck's going on here? Yeah.
And then I was like, you know what? Knowing how this stuff works, I bet it'll be the first 10 games of the season. And there you go. He hasn't scored yet. Everyone's incredibly frustrated and disenchanted with it. I think he's obviously a better player than he's shown so far. He's gotten a few opportunities, like against Carolina, where he nearly scored that nice one where he kind of wrapped it around Kuchekov. If he just gets a few goals here, I think the story and narrative can change quite a bit for him, and so he's a good pick.
His shot rate leaves me very concerned, but I think we've got a long enough track record of DeBrusk being really good to expect it over the balance.
Okay, and I guess the logical third pick, there's basically been three guys who have, I think, have been like very noticeably struggling. Well, four, but I will take Carson Soucy because it has just been so poor. And the high is probably obviously not as high as Elias Pettersson or even Jake DeBrusk if he's clicking, but he was steady and reliable last year, and it's been a disaster so far for Carson Soucy. So I got to imagine there's some form of bounce back coming for Carson Soucy here. And I get the I get the snake pick here. Yep. So I guess I'll have to. I don't know. You know what?
You're gonna reunite the pair.
I'm gonna take, and this is not intended as a slight. If anything, it's a compliment. But I'm gonna take JT Miller because I don't think he's 100%. And we've seen a lot of the turnovers creep in. He's still producing, but I don't think it's an insult to say, but he hasn't been the total, you know, overall impact JT Miller that we saw last year. I think he'll get healthy. I think he'll refine that. So I'll take JT Miller.
I'll go Daniel Sprong here.
Mm.
With my logic being he's only scored the one goal so far. If you look at his PDO, though, particularly the on-ice save percentage has completely just nuked him so far. And so I think he's going to look a lot better if the puck start going the right way when he's on the ice. And also it's kind of a hedge against your pick, Tom.
Yes.
Where if the power play keeps struggling and Elias Pettersson in particular is unwilling to shoot, especially as a one-timer, all of a sudden I think they might explore a little bit more with Sprong just getting shooting opportunities on the top unit power play. So I'll go Daniel Sprong.
Yeah, I like that a fair bit. I'm going to go with, well, I think there's an obvious next pick here, and I think I've got to go with Artur Shelov.
Yeah, somebody's got to pick him.
Yeah, now he might be running out of time to get his game in order, but goaltenders are extremely volatile, and so far, Artur Shelov has looked like unplayable at the NHL level, and I think he's very probably...
You think he's playable?
I think he's very probably at least more like an average backup or a slightly below average backup at the very least. And man, that would represent a massive improvement
from where he's been so far. Drafting like gap, right?
Yeah.
It matters that his performance has been so low so far. Okay. I think we should call it there. It's our time to wrap up. That was good. That was a good business.
Quick two round
professional draft. I appreciated it. Very good. Thanks to Tim. Everyone have a great weekend.
Not like us.
We're back on Monday here for more Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.